Welcome back to Deep Thoughts, ladies and gentlemen. It's a nice, cool evening. Not too bad. Still pretty warm in California during the day. I hate moving this mic because it makes all this... I can't hear a thing, but you guys hear all the bumps. And there's nothing more annoying than when I'm watching someone else. And it's bump, boom, 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 boom. So I apologize if I bang the mic during the episodes. So today we're going to talk about, quite frankly, the literal question... Are there human robots among us? The Cage asked Jack Black in their first Tenacious D album, do you think there's robots among us? He says, no, we don't have the technology. Anyway, he changes the subject. So your instinct might also be to say that. But it was funny, when he asked that question, it was such a random question in the middle of this album of Tenacious D. I think it was released around 2002 or so. I actually saw him in concert. I saw him in concert twice. Once at BlizzCon, and before that, on their Maiden album tour. But I recently saw a conspiracy video that was suggesting this. And it was a gentleman who put together kind of a collage of all of these moments when you have celebrities, especially, and this is from sports celebrities to newscasters and what have you, and they freeze on television. Now, sometimes I think it's just somebody staring off into the distance. Other times I think it's like Shaq. On some ESPN show, he's just goofing off. Then you have those folks that disintegrate on camera. The woman that was reporting, I believe, for the Grammys, she was outside and she's all bundled up in this kind of cashmere coat, and she just disintegrates on camera. And every word she said was absolute nonsense. And you just wonder, like, whoa, is this woman having a small stroke? What's going on here? Was it Al Roker? He did this freeze frame stare forever. That could be, you're just tired as could be. And, you know, you got to stare at the camera. And maybe he's such a pro. He's been doing it for 35 plus years, I think. And he's just trying to look pretty for the camera. But he's also thinking about, again, I hate this job right now. There was a celebrity... sports guy, and I don't know anyone from sports, I apologize, but he was standing getting makeup put on his face, and the dude was just frozen, and the makeup's going on, he wasn't blinking, and it just seemed like it was a little too much in the paralysis mode to look normal. Now there's a whole half of this observation that is that they are MKUltra. And that very well probably has more likelihood where they've gotten their trigger word. They're being programmed. And then the trigger word is spoken again, or the exit trigger word spoken again. And they say whatever they need to say. But that seems like a lot of work to be doing live on TV. When you program them beforehand, maybe there's a mandate there. But when I saw the intro graphics for the HBO series Westworld, where, for those of you who haven't seen it, you see this, I mean, it's just a beautiful theme song. I mean, really, the intro to all three seasons, regardless if you like the show at all, it's just on a level of mastery. It's artistic, it's functional. But they have these robotic arms, and this was all stolen out of Fallout 4 by Bethesda, the video game. They actually successfully sued HBO for stealing this concept, where they had Leonardo. Da Vinci means from Venice. But Leonardo's man illustration, where the guy's got his arms out, you know, showing the proportions of men. But they strap this basic infrastructure of a human being into a unit, and then they build on top of the mechanics, the muscle tissue, just using some sort of rubber, ceramic, or whatever it might be. It's all white in the intro because it was all white in the video game. And then once they build on top of the bones, all the muscle tissues, they then dip it in this milk, which becomes the skin. And of course, they never really explain in Westworld how it goes from milk to flesh tone, especially with all the imperfections and what have you. But you start looking at that, even though it's art, you start looking at it going, wow, they could do what we're seeing in this intro, at least physically. They may not have everything else, which we're going to get into, that would construct a human being. My background is pretty good for giving this a good run. I studied electronics initially just as a shady tree electronics guy with my dad. We fixed all kinds of stuff for money. And then when I moved to California, I enrolled in a robotics correspondence course, believe it or not, because it was 1987, and studied electronics that way, which gave me formal electronics knowledge. And then in the last, say, 4 years, I jumped back in through Arduino, Raspberry Pi stuff, and started looking at what's out there. And of course, it isn't that sophisticated within those systems. And then, of course, for the last 10 years, we've all been monitoring Boston Dynamics. For the last 20 years, I've been monitoring Sony's progress. And so you can go to Disneyland and actually go to what's called the Exploratorium, which used to be the Mission to Mars, which used to be the Future of Tomorrow or something like that. And they have the Sony robot, which you can watch this pretty lame demo of what it does, which is basically less than what a high school student does with an Arduino these days. But I've also been involved with various software projects related to artificial intelligence. So we're going to have some fun here. So I know what you're thinking. If you're a pretty technical person, you're thinking, dude, if you're like me, you might say, well, I know how far AI has gone. I know how far Boston Dynamics goes. Why wouldn't Boston Dynamics be making full-fledged humans? And yeah, trade shows have these god-awful, basically elaborate blow-up dolls that, you know, you'll see this article and they bought the article. The company buys the article in the front of whatever news organization you're sucking down. And it's like, you know, it's just horrible rubber epidermis is on top of these robots, and they don't look, you know, they remotely look human for a split second until you really focus your eyeballs and you're like, oh, yeah, it looks totally fake. And then their movements are all horrible and their mouths don't, you know, it's just bad. Everything that's out there is bad. So you might think, if this was possible, one of these companies would have figured it out. Someone would have a superhuman, and I mean really human behaving robot. So since we don't, that's case in point, this can't be done. All right. How do inventions like this occur, though? There's usually two paths that they take. There is a steady, organic development within universities, within geeks at home who spin off companies. They use maybe something else to make money, and they are engineering something in a basement, and you have just this amalgamation, just like microcomputers, right? They went from mainframes the size of, you know, entire floors, and this is just even in the mid-70s, all the way to personal computers that started blowing up in the 80s, and as gaming demands rose, and then eventually special effects rose up, microcomputers got a tremendous boost. All these video cards, the GPUs are used to harvest bitcoins. I mean, there's all kinds of pressure on the industry to keep going, keep going, keep going. And even then, Intel makes a chip that's roughly about 5 to 10 times faster than the chip you have in your computer, even though it's the same exact chip. And all they do is they internally clock it slower and slower and slower. And then they're unlocking the clock over the course of 5 to 10 years, so they don't have to innovate a new chip. It's all hobbled by design. And all the geeks know this, which is why they overclock, quote unquote, their CPUs and their GPUs, because they know it can handle more. They know they just need to work on cooling it off, which is why you have liquid-cooled PCs now. With the Mac, you don't get any options. It runs as fast as they let you, and there's nothing you can do about it, which is why Windows software can do more than Mac software when it comes to sheer power these days. And I'm a Mac guy who's converted to Windows lately. The other scenario is you have a Tesla, a person who is seeing more than everyone else sees. He or she is extremely enlightened. And they just, I don't know, whatever it is, they see the patterns of invention within the limitations of man, meaning man wants to make full-blown replicant androids, first probably being more like Data on Star Trek Next Generation, and then obviously getting to the Nexus line that the Terrell Corporation created in the movie Blade Runner, indistinguishable from man. These Tesla characters, there's a few ways that they exist, and one is more rare than the other. One is that they're smart beyond their technical prowess, and they understand the forces of the world that would descend upon them should they invent something way beyond what man understands as possible. Meaning, if any one of you create a zero-point energy system and you post it on the internet and you prove it, your house will have more black suits on it within minutes than you could possibly imagine. And I mean minutes. They don't mess around. But if you're smart, you do it like some of the Twilight Zone guys who create a robot in their basement. There's a great Twilight Zone where this dude creates a robot in the basement, and he's got this assistant who's been taking care of him, and he's so mean to her. There's a spoof on that in Creepshow by Stephen King. But what ends up happening is he tells her, she knows that when he dies, she inherits the mansion and all of his money. So he's just persecuting her the whole time. But then he dies, and there's part of his will that she goes downstairs and opens his door, which then reveals this robot, which is, I think, Robbie the Robot with a different head on him. And at first, it's really kind of dumb. And then eventually it takes on his personality, and he rules the house again, and she's in prison again, and he's a jerk. And so that's another technique, which is hiding in your basement and creating this kind of stuff. Now, if you were the government that would really, really want this, and this is not counting external intervention from perhaps aliens. You know, what's really interesting is the Greys have been categorized as robots, which is really funny, because if they are robots, then all the fake autopsies must suggest that they are organic robots and therefore just as good as what I'm talking about. But they never have had like the Klaatu and Gort relationship, right? Klaatu was the human and Day the Earth Stood Still, and Gort was the robot. So if you were the government, or even, you know, a secret Rothschild trillionaire person who's like, I want this, find me the people who can get it done. And money is no object. You want $1 billion? Whatever. There's $1 billion. Whatever you want. Set up a facility, put it underground so no one can find it. And just whatever you want, you got it. Just get it done. That's possible too. But now, think about it this way. If you're making this in some covert way, you wouldn't want anyone else to know you're doing it. So that's an easy concept, right? But what if you wanted to disinfo anyone else as to what your maxim is in this particular realm of technology? Let's say you're the United States. It's just an example. underground, they, I'm just going to make this up, let's say they put aside $50 billion, which should be enough to really spike this project, because they're going to create a, they're going to create a replica. They just are. They won't stop until they do. If it takes them 50 or 100 years, they're going to do it. So what they do to make sure that Russia, China, Europe do not catch on that they have advanced technologies that can make this happen is that obviously anyone who touches a piece of technology, meaning they invent it, that would be a staple to this replicant project, they swallow them up really quick. They invite them into the project or kill them off. But, you know, inventors typically love the concept of having infinite budgets. And they make a DARPA-funded Boston Dynamics, which is just, it's doing a good job, but it's not funded properly. It doesn't really have the goal of making humans, replicant humans. And so that's sort of a, look, we are making progress here, but see how far back it is from actual Blade Runner replicants. Meanwhile, in a basement, you have this coming together, slowly but surely. So I made an episode called Building a UFO a long time ago, which, by the way, has become an extreme tool for me in conversations with friends. And I just put together, logistically, how to make a UFO. And then I did a second follow-up episode, which is space travel. And I refer back to it. Wish my Blender skills had been where they are today. The graphics would have been so much better. So how do you logistically break this down? Let's pretend this is our old Deep Thoughts technique. Again, if we had Deep Thoughts University somewhere on the planet, this is what we would do just because. You got to break down what a human body is. Well, there would be a few things. We know a ton about the human body, don't we? Now, the human body has all kinds of requirements. Breathing, blood, all this stuff. I mean, there's, if you hurt the outside skin, it bruises because you busted all the capillaries and you've maybe busted some veins inside your body and you're bleeding around inside your body, turning purple until things heal up and everything seals off or the veins die and reroute. We're amazing, amazing creation, right? But if we're going to make a robot, why would we make it with any of those dependencies? We sure as hell wouldn't make it eat food. I mean, we might make it capable of taking in food and simply mulching it up to the point it could waste it out some normal orifice like the human has, but we wouldn't make it dependent on sugars, carbohydrates, complex sugars, fats. So the first design charter is to remove all of the limitations and requirements and dependencies that the human body has. I mean, why put that in there? It's more work for no benefit whatsoever. Now, of course, we will get to a point where we discuss the facsimile and the fraud that is the epidermis and hair and teeth and eyeballs and things that the people can see, fingernails. We'll get there. But initially, we're going to make sort of the drone-y kind of robots that you end up seeing in Westworld Season 2, which are just white beings that look like maybe they were dipped, but they have more of an exoskeleton on the outside that is sort of armor-based. I don't believe they have any true facial features. But now what's interesting about the whole thing is that we have the schematics of the human body. We can make the human body in all kinds of shapes and sizes, right? Initially, what is a human being? I mean, the core thing that is the human being would be the bone structure. A brilliantly pre-designed, pre-balanced, amazing thing. Now, obviously, getting it to balance and getting it to function is going to be one of our milestones we're going to figure out. We now have various plastics and metals that can be put together to react to electricity to function like a muscle. You've probably seen, if you're sort of a YouTuber, there are various metals that, when heated and electrified, create little grasshoppers and little fake, you know, frogs. You know, they look like origami. You can take metals and forge them in ways that their thickness varies, and when you heat them up, they immediately fold into a shape like a protein. Very cool. So we would probably not mess with the human skeleton, meaning we wouldn't redesign any of the bones, because if we redesign a single bone within the threshold of bone generation in general, right? So we might take a 6'5" guy and a 5-foot girl skeleton and start to find where we have leeway. How big can we make a femur? How big can we make a pelvis? And if we make the pelvis that big, this is generally how big the upper bones are. And there's going to be a huge key helper in this whole thing, which I'll get to in a second. We know the muscle structure that goes over the bones. We know where cartilage is. Depending on what we're making this thing out of, cartilage may or may not need to be as functional as it is in the human body. I mean, cartilage actually wears away in your knees and your spine and your vertebrae. So what I'm talking about is the initial step that would be the credits of Westworld. Figuring out a way to at least build the human body. We don't have to worry about its functionality just yet, but we do want muscle groups, and we do want a way to electrify them logically, because we are going to have to build an artificial nervous system that's going to talk to every single muscle group. We don't need blood. We don't necessarily need a heart the way that the human body uses it. We would probably need a heart to create a facsimile for perhaps a doctor putting a stethoscope up against your chest and hearing the bump, bump, bump. Or if you want to fall in love with somebody and put your head on their chest, hopefully they're emulating that they're alive. Warmth in the body would have to be something we would have to simulate. But immediately, if you're normal, you're going to think, well, dude, the thing that we can't creates the brain. I mean, Kurzweil's up there in the Singularity Project just blowing smoke up everyone's holes that he's going to create a computer brain. And he's going to, he literally believes he's going to have that complete and image his brain into a computer. Interesting, right? But we have two sort of secret weapons that can be combined, in my opinion, to sort through a tremendous amount of the R&D relatively quickly. One of them is called big machine learning, and the other one's called quantum computing. And when combined, depending on how efficient the programmers are, depending on how observant the biologists are, and the neurologists, because again, we don't have to create necessarily all the complexities of the human body. We just have to create a facsimile that's convincing. And let's put some further parameters on the entire project. Gen 1, let's put it that way. Now, technically speaking, Gen 1 would be getting the being to come alive to some definable degree, and let's just say it can't do anything, but it's lying down on a table. And we've got the program at the point where when we wake it up, it opens its eyes, and it's registering sight, and it has microphones in the ear. And we could even construct something like the hammer in the ear and actually metabolize sound closer to the way the humans do. It just depends. But we would want that being to be able to speak. And again, we could create some sort of speaker in the throat, which would be some 1950s implementation, or it would always die like this, or we could labor to try and recreate the vocal cord of the human being, which sounds impossible, right, with our current technology. But with big machine learning and quantum computing, I think these insurmountable things, these unimaginable things, are now technically possible. I'm not saying it's easy, but what's interesting about those two technologies being brought together is that we can have big machine learning observe behaviors of all definable behaviors. And I mean, if you can conceive of a pattern of behavior in any way, shape, or form, big machine learning can be set up to observe billions and billions of examples. And then as long as we know how to map what it's observing to an invention, that invention can be controlled by the big machine learning programs, or by an artificial intelligence writes the program for us. When Kurzweil started talking about, you know, imaging his brain into a computer, and let me just rewind for you. So I was on a movie project for 3 years at least, solid, man, which was a film that was stolen from us and became Johnny Depp's Transcendence movie. It's not Johnny's fault, okay? But it was about uploading your consciousness into a computer, as well as I was sort of under the covers for the Tron Legacy project. Sadly, I was not allowed to get on the rewrite team, because that movie would have been a hell of a lot better, although casting is what screwed it up. But yeah, just to put a finer note on that, the guy that played Zeus, who's a great comedic British actor, was sadly horribly miscast. And I think that part of the movie, when you go to the nightclub and directly in the center of the film, it just destroys the entire film and tries to get back on track, which it kind of does. Not that actor's fault. He's an amazing actor. He's now in that Angel Devil series with David Tennant, doing a fantastic job. But if they really wanted to steal the guy from the Matrix, he was open for employment. They should have just hired that dude. But then it would have been a dead ripoff of that guy, because it would have been the same actor. So they shouldn't have written such a character, but whatever. What I'm getting at is that in being involved with these projects, we sat around thinking about what it means to truly capture the brain inside of a computer. Now, for those of you hardcore listeners, you know I believe in a soul, and not from some guilt trip, God complex, I fear the Lord and Jesus taking my... No. My beliefs are in one camp, which involve those characters, and my technical belief of how we come together is very scientific. I think we have scientific proof that, well, I should say, by those of us who aren't in pop science and we're not on television and we're not stuck in sitcoms and movies to popularize ourselves, we have proof there's a spiritual realm, and spiritual realms don't exist without souls. It just don't. And soul, don't worry about religious definitions of soul. It's simply what we call the organized energy that is your true indestructible consciousness. Your body can die infinitely, and your soul never dies. You can't hide energy in the universe. So, but let's just say, for instance, your soul has taken advantage of the binary system of your neural net, and at least at one point in time, there's an instance of consciousness that perhaps holds more than the soul has, or sorry, as much as the soul has, which I doubt. But what I told my buddy who wrote this film, I don't want to say his name so it doesn't cause issues for him, but was that if we capture the brain, it's going to be a mechanism by which we capture it by design without the complexity of actually having to do the labor. And I'll give you an example that's more coarse. What if you wanted to create a mask of a human being who's famous while they're alive. There's death masks too, but you're not a sculptor. But you want to be known for creating these masks of individuals. There's all kinds of Hollywood special effects people from the 80s who did this in the 90s. When Arnold Schwarzenegger was in Total Recall back in the day, there's several masks of his face that were created. What do? You put that plaster all over their face, that rubber plaster. Actually, you put plaster on their face. You put oil on their face, you put the plaster on, you let it dry, you get little air hole straws and that kind of thing. Tell them not to move, and you have them lean forward, and it comes off. And there you've got the imprint of their face. Every pore, mole, eyelash, eyebrow, hairline, it's all inside the mask. Now you just pour the rubber in there, and you've got at least the casting of their face. Now, did you sculpt their face? No, you did not. You were able to use a technology that by design captured their face. So when I say capturing the brain by design, it would have to be some really generic iterative technology that could somehow scan in 3D the entire state of the human body within a nanosecond, I would say would be a comfortable increment of time, meaning instantaneously, and therefore the weathering pattern of the entire body is captured at once. You don't have to personally program all the ones and zeros. You don't have to do, and we're going to read this part and I'm going to read that part. And nope, you cast the entire face at the same time, not the nose just once. And then you attach it to the ear later on. It's all at the same time. That is how I believe Kurzweil could capture the energy matrix of the human body. I just don't think we have the technology to pull it off that quickly, at least without probably killing the human being. But think about the three-dimensional mesh of the human body. I mean, that's a lot of data all over the place. Just capturing the brain, I don't think that quite gets it done. But big machine learning, let's go for the vocal cord. Let's say we figure out how to three-dimensionally capture the movements of the vocal cord to create the vowels and the consonants that we use for any one particular language. Maybe it's cameras, maybe it's some sort of ultrasound, whatever captures the three-dimensional shape and its frequency of morphing. Because obviously when you sing, I've seen a couple of videos that were x-ray machines where people are singing and you see their vocal cords vibrate extremely fast. As long as this system has a iteration that is faster than the human body moves, we will capture every single fold, wiggle, mucus buildup, dry area. And we'll be able to model the vocal cord. Then we put it through big machine learning to start averaging multiple vocal cords through all the vowels, through all the consonants, through any other phonic that's coming out of the throat. You could do a guy beatboxing if you wanted to, but you'd also have to track the lips and the tongue, all that data, right? And you put it together such that at least the big machine learning algorithm goes, I know what you need to do with the human system to create a particular sound. Now, obviously, the cavity inside of our skull has to be replicated as well. For those of you who are sort of, either you are an anthropologist or you are interested in such a thing, the evolution from hominid to Homo sapien, where the missing link is, according to their definition of time and carbon dating, is supposedly 150 million years missing. We have 32 different skulls before that point. And all the stuff after, with hominid right beside man, when Homo sapiens sapiens showed up, the redesign of the skull from hominid to Homo sapiens sapiens is phenomenal. It's where we actually redesigned the nasal cavity, the brain cavity got bigger, and suddenly we could speak. We didn't have to howl anymore. So when it comes to the theories of being dropped off by aliens or spliced with indigenous hominids to create man based on some other genetic, there's a tremendous amount of evidence to suggest that that's what took place. So now let's take every other metric of human behavior and run it through the same process. Starting with the most simple of simple things. Now again, we would have to come up with an imaging system of electricity in every single facet of the human body. Let's just say we wanted to track what it was like to lay down in a relaxed form, meaning we're not using our body. Laying down is different than sitting straight up, right? You're still using muscle groups when you sit straight up. Now, technically, when you're conscious, you're using muscle groups as well, which is why when they hypnotize you and they say, relax, right? Relax, sink into your bed, just feel yourself falling into the mattress. You do. You realize you're using a bunch of muscles, even though you're lying in your bed. So let's just say they get some pretty trained people to relax, but you want to track the brain telling the finger to move up and down. That sounds pretty trivial, but there's a ton of stuff going on. You know, there's a certain part of the brain, the left side, sort of centers where my finger is working on the right side. And so they map this human being with special technology to be able to three-dimensionally track the transmission of data from conscious thought to the finger. Okay. That would be like a one-off experiment to test whether or not the technology is actually working. Probably very crude at first. Now, how many of you know what motion capture is? Motion capture is the process of putting a human being inside a motion capture suit or a motion capture system. They're extremely cool nowadays and very uninvasive. And you move around, and there's wires in some of the cases. There's little dots in the other cases you're being observed. And there's a new one now that you can actually wear like a pager, and you just have some wires on your body. And I think it tracks like 11 hours inside this little tiny box, and you bring it to your computer, and it tells you where all your fingers were, your arms, your toes. It probably doesn't track your actual face, which is why in Weta, when they did the Planet of the Apes remakes, they, you know, pulled this off. Of course, Avatar used it as well, a bunch of things. Benjamin Button. But now imagine that you take the principle of motion capture and you build a full ectosuit and maybe even a facial mask of some sort. Could be you're actually wearing a camera as well, like a headgear where it's actually filming your face with little dots suggesting where things are, even though dots are a little primitive nowadays because they can flat out know where your mouth is. I mean, look at all these cell phone apps that can turn you into a bunny. It's tremendous, man. So you build one that is tracking all the movement of the body, but as an additional layer to it, it's tracking all of the electricity. And it might actually end up triangulating electricity. What do I mean by that? Well, let's say, you know, and the nervous system is moving at a massive pace, right? But computers can move faster. Or as fast as. Imagine you've got some electricity going down your forearm to the finger, but it's embedded in some flesh. But you've got sensors all over the body in this incredibly detailed matrix. This meaning it's like the pixels on your telephone are way more dense than the pixels on your TV. Something to that degree. A sub millimeter, submicron density. And what's happening is as electricity moves through your muscle tissues, these very sensitive milliamp little sensors are sensing the electricity. One of them gets a little stronger, but since it's going through muscle tissue and it's electrifying everything in all directions, even perhaps a minuscule magnetic pole is going around this little message coming from your brain. It's almost like a Hadron Collider using a Sigma 5 algorithm. You can figure out where your electricity is in your flesh. Connect that to big machine learning. Connect it. I mean, the suit might look absolutely ridiculous. It might be that the suit might weigh 1,000 pounds and it's on a harness and you're just moving around the room while you're educating the big machine learning. Again, basic functions first, complex functions later, like dancing, maybe throwing a baseball, whatever. But it is tracking and recording the from tos of these muscle groups that you're replicating on your replicant skeleton. It's not only saving how the messages transfer from the brain to the muscles, but it's transferring, it's saving all of the other ancillary things that are going on. Standing up, and my example that I didn't finish, the being is laying down, it wakes up. Perhaps at that point, you just have a conversation with it, which was dramatized in Westworld. You want to hear it talk back because you mastered vocal cord movement, tongue movement, which would be just phenomenal. You could have different groups, right? One group's working on the head, working on linguistics. The other group's working on sight, eyeball movements. It's all being tracked, right? Others are just working on walking, laying down, getting up, core body movements. By triangulating the electricity, we can figure out what muscle groups are actually getting the message, as long as we use human anatomy to figure this out. Again, if we divert away from human anatomy, then we are resetting the complexity of the game. And that's something we can do in a future generation, as we can use big machine learning to suggest, you know what, you could combine these two muscle groups and get the same job done. I figured it out. But if you want that being to get up and lean up in the table, swing itself around. So it drops its legs over the edge of the table. It's got its palms on the edge of the table. It's going to do all the leaning and moving and tilting. Put those feet on the ground and stay balanced. It's a super complex thing. But to big machine learning, it's at least playback wouldn't be that intense. Now, of course, there's anomalies. If you captured the movements of perhaps a 5'10" male, it's probably a good idea that we would make a 5'10" skeleton with all the muscle groups on it so that we don't get things off equilibrium wise, right? But that's why we want to track as many body types as possible, so the big machine learning can figure out all the differential algorithms for how to move the body based on its size. Maybe we discover it's one set of neural messages works for any body type. I suspect it's probably very close to that. But I think that a 6'8" basketball player who has a longer distance to have his brain talk to his feet. And I know it's really, really quick, but we're talking about nanoseconds. So you can slow down time. You can slow down light with a nanosecond, man. It's going to be a longer message to wiggle his toe than a 5-foot woman wiggling her toe. So we need to know these things. We can only rely on, well, with Eric Dollard's help, we could actually create longitudinal circuits. And we could achieve faster than light travel to and from these organs. Can you imagine that? A being that has got a neural system 11 times the speed of light. I believe his little laboratory in his basement was called Borderland or something like that. Can't remember exactly what it was. About 4 or 5 guys working in the basement filming this thing. But where does quantum computing come in? Because I said quantum computing would be a huge part of this. Well, big machine learning consumes a tremendous amount of processing power. And we have a Mount Everest amount of data to mulch constantly to come to any bearable, usable conclusions. What are we told about quantum computers today? I have a whole episode on quantum computers. If you don't know what one is, I explain it to you with illustrations and all kinds of stuff. So definitely get over there and take a look. Just go to deepthoughtsradio.com, search on quantum if you know how to spell it, or computers if you don't know how to spell quantum. But it uses the rotational frequency of atoms to guess solutions to problems. So as an atom rolls around several times in a second, they're using that as a projector into equations to quickly come up with the equation that, or the solution that actually works through the equation. And if the equation has many solutions, then it will find all of them as fast as possible. Again, I believe the analogy was that once they stabilize 300 qubits, they will be able to have a computer here on Earth that can conceive of every single grain of sand on every planet in the universe, including all of the stardust that's floating around. And whether or not they get down to ethereal particle counts, not sure. We have to go to 1,000 qubits. Once they can stabilize 50 to 100% accuracy, then it's no problem adding another 1,000. And that would be a number of, you know, 1 to the power of 2, 1,000 times. It's a horrendously large number, okay? So in order to get these big machine learning algorithms to figure out the human body within our lifetime, these quantum computers can be very useful. Now, currently, quantum computers are about a 5 to 1% error rate, meaning I couldn't find a decent definition of what they actually consider to be an error, but it would be probably losing track of one of the atoms that they're using to create a qubit. And there's several different elements in the periodic table that are very instrumental. I think sulfur was one of them, but watch the episode because I quote a few that are in there. They have to be stable enough to isolate, and through electricity, they can actually freeze them in a particular polarity, meaning instead of rotating constantly, they can hit it with a little bit of electricity and it all stabilizes. But imagine that. Probably even 50 stable qubits solves our problem quite a bit. Now, what's interesting about it is that most of us who look at DARPA, Boston Dynamics robots, I always like to say DARPA so you know where it originated from. Google funded them for a little while and then pulled out because I think it looked pretty suspect. Is that we know that they have the dog, they have the mule, which looks like a cow, and they have the couple levels of humans. One is humanoid thin and one's humanoid big. Right now, they're pretty intense, right? But every time you see them, initially they had the wire hanging from the ceiling, like a tether to a VR goggles, for all kinds of different reasons. They didn't have to put the computer on board, meaning if it falls over, rolls down, the computer circuitry doesn't take the impact. But two, the big one was the power supply. Running all those little servos and hydraulics and whatever they're using to do what they're doing takes a tremendous amount of power, just eat it up really quickly. Now, okay, so you put that off to the side. That's what robots have as a major limitation. Okay. Well, do you and I have a power plant inside of us? I mean, are we Iron Men? Do we have a little nuclear reactor, a little zero-point energy system in our chest? Nah. I don't think I have a battery in me anywhere. I mean, I got scanned from my crotch to the top of my head. There wasn't a Duracell in there somewhere. So isn't it interesting? We have this amazing system that can consume food and water. And we create enough energy, just like the Matrix movie alluded to, was on point about. We're all a bunch of batteries inside this Matrix computer. My God, imagine that was real. And we can do all kinds of stuff. I mean, look at the entire world, man. You look around in a big city. Man did all that. Man built the roads. Man built the buildings. You can't even see vegetation in Nice, right? It's the concrete city of the universe. The Eiffel Tower. Big giant buildings in Dubai and Singapore. And that didn't require any hardcore Tesla battery inside of us. So we got something going for us in this food metabolization system. Talk about ingenious. But unfortunately, unless we can create a system to break down food and steal its sugar calorie system and its fat calorie system and burn that in a way that can create electricity, we're going to have a power system inside of us. Depending on the use of the robot, it would set off metal detectors unless we can find a way to insulate it. I mean, we don't have to use metals at all. We could use ceramics. So someone's going to have to, in the team, create the power source for all this. But for now, we don't care about it at first. We'll supply through a cable, through a outlet in the wall, the power necessary to make this happen. But now here's what's interesting about human biology. And I wish I still had my microbiology buddy in my friend circle, because I would probably have thrown this by him initially. What do we know about where the energy is stored within the human body? What organs obviously use electricity quite a bit, but what organs are mainly distribution centers of electricity, and which organs are more the receptors of electricity? I would have to guess that the brain is the distribution center. But, you know, the heart's pumping constantly. Your autonomic system of your body's moving blood. Your arteries actually undulate like worms. They move things through. That's why, a little footnote here. There was a point in my life when I actually first started smoking cigars as an adult. I just went over to this guy's smoke lounge, and he actually has his own line of cigars, and I was trying to help him sell them. But he was also being solicited, because this happens at smoke shops. Investors always come into smoke shops looking for rich people. And they try to tap him because they were going to be making their own energy drink, which was more like a chocolate kind of drink. I had some. It was pretty delicious. And I sat down with them. I said, so what makes your energy drink better than somebody else's? I said, well, ours doesn't have any of that crap that's in Monster and Red Bull. I don't know anything about it at the time, so I'm like, okay, well, lay it on me, man. What's the problem? He goes, well, the active ingredient in both those drink systems and all their spin-off coffees and all that stuff hardens your arteries. And that's why all these kids are dying after a football game in high school. You pound these things. So if you drink a lot of energy drinks, you're hardening your arteries. And when you harden your arteries, they don't do this thing. They don't undulate and keep the plaque off the inside of your arteries. So if you eat crappy food, cholesterol, and a bunch of other stuff, you'll get plaque near your heart. And those big fat arteries keep your system pumping. And then at a particular time, let's say you got off the drinks, and now it starts to free up those little plaque clusters, and it moves into your heart. And it can kill you in a split second. You have your heart attack in a split second. Meeting one with family members, they got an open heart surgery. Both my uncle and my dad got it. Because I got my dad's heart, my dad's family's heart. I have my mom's family's heart, thank God. It's a congenital thing. It's just, they shouldn't be messing around. Amyloid plaque clusters in your brain causes Alzheimer's. Jeez. What if it had to do something with the drinks? And that's just what happens in the brain. So our little robot, if he or she ate something, we'd want to just hold it in a container, maybe pulverize it using electricity or some onboard chemical, and then they waste it out on a toilet just like everybody else. You pee the water out the front, let go of the other stuff out the back. And so they can simulate the need to go to the restroom. Now, whether or not we have technology to metabolize the energy out of food is beyond my knowledge. Meaning I don't think that I've ever read an article that claims such a thing for a mechanical object. That would be nice, wouldn't it? But what's interesting is, again, our system, our body, is using milliamps all over the place to accomplish everything that we accomplish all day long. It's a phenomenal system. So I think the charter of our little project, if not a massive project, would be able to attempt to create a muscle group system that reacts to that minuscule amount of energy such that if we did have to charge up our little robot here to go out in the public and mess with people, it would be a very generously small system operating on the same parameters of a human being. But now, let's jump into Westworld Season 1 a little bit, Episode 1. Again, if you haven't seen at least the first season of Westworld, you have robbed yourself and you have a present waiting for you. If you like good science fiction, and I mean fiction, meaning this stuff has sort of the principles of being possible as opposed to science fantasy, sci-fi, right? Star Wars is sci-fi, Blade Runner is science fiction. 2001 was science fiction. They had these behaviors, which I apologize, the name escapes me. They used it in the script. But it were these little nuances that they started to notice when they would bring one of what they called a host, which is what they call the robots. They were hosting the humans. The guests was what they called the humans. And they brought one in for maintenance, one of the prostitutes from the brothel. And she was sitting there by herself, and she's sort of in program mode, which means she's not talking and being herself, narrating her character. And she went up and touched her lips like this, and she just pulls out her lips. She's like, oh my gosh, like she's doing something. And the QA person's like, what is that? And he said, oh, that's the new thing that the Ford put in there. The guy who designed these things, he put in these new things, these little vignettes of behavior that they create themselves as a result of being alive in that world. We do it all the time. So there's the old story about the diamond versus the cubic zirconia. How can you tell the difference? Well, when you pull up one of these rocks up to your magnifying eyeball thing, a diamond has imperfections. A cubic zirconia is perfect. That's how you know it's fake. So part of our big machine learning would be, after we master the basic functionality of our robot, our replicant, we then have to layer on top of basic functionality the nuances of man. Where do we have differences between us? Because, movie stars, how do we impersonate movie stars? Well, Jack Nicholson has those crazy eyebrows and he's got that thing, Wendy, give me the bat. All the impersonations you've ever seen, George Bush impersonations, Donald Trump impersonations, they have things about them that make them unique. Sometimes people have physical tics. Those are other things. We generally consider a tic a general imperfection in behavior. It could be neurological. It could be psychological. So we'd have to consider, at some point, every nuance that we want to address. And once we identify a nuance that we want to address, we need to take the big machine learning system that we've hooked up and capture the behavior of as many people as possible. And now what's interesting, going back to the mocap, is that I'm a Blender artist, okay, in 3D, right? Mocapping has refined itself tremendously. There's a brand new mocapping service, and the name escapes me at the moment. But what you can do is put yourself in front of a green screen or a single colored wall where you're not wearing that color. And you can, in fact, you're supposed to be able to upload like videos of people playing basketball on a court, even that. And this system understands what is moving and what is not moving. And it understands the human form so well that it will send you back the mocap of all the human beings in that scene, including their depth of field, like how far they are away from the camera. And it captures all basic movements. Now, again, it's not really capturing the face yet that I know of, but that's an amazing step up. So say you've got this crackpot team that knows everything. And when you meet a true, I don't even know what you call them, geek is not good enough. Like a true whiz kid in a particular technology, they blow your mind, man. They'll go, oh, well, you know, like, what are you working on, man? And they'll be like, oh, I'm working on this. And they click a button and something mind-blowing happens on the screen. You're like, what? Right? Those people exist and they know where how to harvest them through Mensa, through Prometheus, through Caltech, MIT, Oxford, Cambridge, all these places. They know how to find them. They test well in school. Now it gets percolated up into a database. Any kid that graduates high school at 12 is a candidate, especially if they're into computer sciences or robotics or both or electronics. So imagine this. In addition to all of our laboratory experiments to map the human body, which is a very specific, invasive operation for whoever's guinea pigging themselves into the system, we can actually have a computer at some point in the future on a separate team. Once we figure out the touch points that we want to put into the big machine learning, I'll give you an example of that just in case that doesn't make sense to you. If you wanted to, say, figure out the average range of a forearm, you could videotape a forearm and every single conceivable maneuver that's going to happen. And what you're telling the big machine learning is, this is the elbow, this is the wrist, these are where all the bones are. That's what you know about these parts of the body, the two bones in your forearm and how they can actuate and turn, all the little phalanges and all the little pieces. And then you tell the computer to just watch and learn. What is possible is what is happening. What is not as possible is what is not happening. So you get a positive and a negative. Now, what could actually take place is it's putting all this together. And then with that fuzzy logic thing from Westworld, you can say, well, you're more than welcome to try out different moves, but you're not to stress the muscle tissue too much. I mean, you're not allowed to break your own arm. And I think that it would be interesting because we could definitely build bones that would be almost impossible to break. You know, have you ever tried to open up one of those plastic envelopes you get mail in these days? I mean, it's hard to open them, right? The old FedEx bag, which is now everywhere. Just that synthetic plastic. It's amazing. Imagine making a bone out of stuff. I hope it goes without saying that this beam would be extremely formidable, like a replicant. Could beat the crap out of you. Could lift more than you can lift. Could handle all kinds of things, right? But you could have an AI watch every single movie that has ever been captured by man and say, learn what you can. And if it has a movie scene that's tough for the computer to figure out, your engineers, technically speaking, could go into the software, watch the scene, watch the big machine learning metrics, which is all the little points that it's going to be tracking, and upgrade the software. And just, oh, I get it. Yeah, because, you know, that guy walked by the other guy, that confused the system. So let's upgrade that system to keep these two people apart. Even when they walk by each other, even if they have a lovemaking session, it doesn't lose track of whose legs are who and whose body's who and all that kind of stuff, right? But all I've been talking about so far is the base functionality of this being within the project. What is technically possible? We're just executing raw commands to give it the human capability of movement, of eyesight, ear, hearing, verbal communication, perhaps a technique to ingest food and excrete it. As a footnote to the epidermis, I heard this story from a good friend of mine. I think it was a sales guy at a software company of mine. And he was in an elevator ride with somebody somewhere in San Francisco. I believe is where the story originated in the 90s. And the story goes is that he was in an elevator ride with an old friend of his. It just was a coincidental thing that he met his buddy. And he was like, dude, where you been, man? And it's great. What are you working on these days? And here's how he said the story. He had this satchel with him. And he opens up the satchel and he goes, well, I'll show you. And he pulls out this material and hands it to my buddy. And my buddy grabs it with his hand and was immediately freaked out. This was a quarter inch thick material that was artificial skin. And he said, man, he goes, I freaked out because it felt so much like human skin. It was ridiculous. And he goes, yeah, man, we've got this technology that can make skin. And it can be made biologically compatible with the human being. And we can grow this stuff now. You know, more skin grafts or any of that kind of stuff. This was a long time ago, man. Never heard of this technology getting out into the market. Still hear about people getting injured and having to do skin grafts, which is just a horrific experience. So in terms of making the outside human body appear real. Now, what I don't know about that technology is, can you make arm hair, head hair, eyebrows? Can you make it grow whiskers? Don't know. Don't know at all. With 3D printing, 3D printing is, there's two halves of 3D printing, and I watched a bunch of tutorials, and 3D printing was starting to be rumored to exist. I don't know if this material can be, these videos can be watched today. The very first one I watched was a total geek who had done some 3D modeling, and he was showing you how they can 3D print molecules down to, you know, I mean, we know we've got all different materials out there. That's not a big surprise, but they were essentially able to stack atoms together to be whatever the hell they wanted. So can you imagine? We're at the super advanced level of literally the precipice of mankind's engineering in our project. Imagine taking human flesh with hair follicles in it and literally printing that stuff where it's supposed to be. Literally the direction the hair should grow, whether the hair follicle is going to be a whisker hair versus a hair on your head or in your arm or other places. Now, obviously, it goes without saying there's got to be a technology to attach the epidermis to all these muscle groups. But I haven't gotten into personality, the actual true emulation of the human condition. Well, this is the bane of all AI programmers. But let's go back to our analogy with molding the face. By design. We get it accomplished by mirroring by design. We don't sculpt the face. We put plaster Paris on the face, pull it off, and then put our artificial skin inside the mold. The skin takes the shape of the mold. No one was Michelangelo sculpting that thing out. We simply copied it. This gets to also the, was it the Jeff Goldblum character in Jurassic Park where he's warning them? He's like, dude, you know, just because you resurrected a dinosaur doesn't mean you understand what the hell you just did. And of course, you made this really insane correlation with chaos theory. I guess at a real macro level, everything in the universe folds into chaos theory. So the human condition is obviously defined infinitely by all the emotions that we can have. We have, you know, what we consider to be the intangibles. Anger, sadness, happiness, love, being inquisitive, being indignant, being entitled. That's one example supply. Being sympathetic, being empathetic, processing environmental change. You're really hot right now. You're really cold right now. You're just perfect. So, in that particular case, and this has been a long pronounced theory in artificial intelligence engineering, which is when you take a Turing test disciple programmer in AI, and you're trying to create some sort of like text-based application. The first Turing test was, there was a wall in a room, human beings on one side, some human beings on the other side, but some of those inputs and responses were coming back from a program. The old program back in the 70s was called Lucy. It was pretty good. It was pretty amazing. But if you could fool a human being on the other side of the wall, that it was talking to a human being on the other side of the wall, but it was actually an AI, and you passed the Turing test. Brilliant. The story of Turing is actually such a sombering tale, and yours truly thinks the Project Enigma was a complete propaganda piece, which is why there's no evidence that it ever happened, and there's no sense in destroying his machine that cracked Project Enigma. It's just the biggest telltale sign that whole thing is a hoax. You would never destroy that machine. You would put it in the British Museum and say, look how smart British people are. One of our dudes created this, and then we threatened him with chemical castration because he was a homosexual, and he eventually took his own life. If that guy had done Project Enigma, he would not have been forced by the courts to be castrated chemically. Winston Churchill would have signed the Queen herself would have signed a pardon for that guy. And the fact that he killed himself is proof, again, that Project Enigma is just a Cumberbatch movie that was fun to watch. But we would need a way. I think it was called Reveries or something like that in Westworld. It's going to bother me until I look it up. But we would need a way to capture these emotions. Well, what is an emotion? The intangible emotions. Let's just use love for a split second. Now, the unfortunate thing is that babies are born without the ability to communicate in any complex manner. Now, you ask a mother or a father, we definitely can look into their eyes and their souls are reading our souls, and there's definitely a line of communication there. But if we really wanted to get down to the nitty-gritty of what some of these emotions require, then we have a quantifiable pocket of time, in my opinion, that is required to incubate up the concept of love, hate, sadness, whatever. When you feel sympathetic towards someone, you have to understand their situation, which means you have to have lived your life to understand where they've got themselves in their life, such that you would give them some sympathy. Now, empathy is super complex compared to sympathy, which is that you are vicariously feeling their emotions. Because again, you've had similar experiences in your life. You understand pain and suffering. Therefore, when you see indicators of pain and suffering in their expressions, you draw back on your own experience in order to have it. So some of this emulation of human being, or human behavior, excuse me, requires a past. Introducing Philip K. Dick, who understood this, which is why in his book, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, and his contribution to the memory track theories. I think Earl Hammer was the guy that actually did the memory track episode in Twilight Zone. I could be wrong on that one, but the idea was that if you're going to birth a robot at a mature age, let's just say 35 years old, 30 years old, somewhere in there, you want your robot to to exude a physical appearance of the level of sophistication they should be at. So if you were to make an 8-year-old android, well, then you could start with less programming, less memories within that being, because they could be more naive. But if you're going to birth someone who's 55 years old, give them a backstory that they were some, you know, mogul or a mother that's had 4 kids, and all that wear and tear of those lives has to be pre-programmed into that person so that we believe the illusion. Now, the other technique would be to say you want to emulate, say, for strategic reasons, a politician who's got power, because you're going to pull a scam on the people. Then you would have to pick your politician, your sports figure, whatever, and program into that AI all of their attributes. Now it just got way more difficult for the team who owns that particular part of the game. Can big machine learning help? It could help to the degree that we could capture the overall moments that contributed to this AI. And as I was about to mention before, AI programmers have all come to the conclusion after trying to create the Turing test that to get it any more complex than a Turing test, which today is not hard to pass, you have to have a body. Everyone comes to the conclusion. When I was in high school and getting into AI on my own on the side, which I was trying to program a system that could read all the articles that I could feed it. And through big machine learning, it wasn't called that back then, it could predict what words should be spoken after the word it just spoke in order to retrieve information from a human or to perhaps regurgitate something it had already learned. I just didn't have the computer power to pull it off, but you realize in order to make a true human, you have to have the eyes and the ears. You have to have all the senses of the human body at a minimum to take in a histogram, meaning data over time, to be able to come up with combinations that would turn into something that would emulate human behavior on a psychological level. Now, one of the interesting ways that this could be done, and this would be probably a 20 to 30 year experiment, would be to create an apparatus that could be easily worn on the body, nothing too invasive, but it would be put on a human being at the earliest age possible, and it would track every single thing that the human being experienced. It would have cameras somewhere near the eye, microphones somewhere near both ears. You have to track both ears separately in case they hear an explosion over here. It's much louder than it is in this side of the ear, or chronologically it went, you know, right, left, and they suddenly look right. You would need to know that in order to emulate it later on. And then we would take all the data being processed through the ear and through easy voice recognition transcripting, figure out what was spoken around them, what words they chose to speak, and probably create as many of these people as you possibly could and keep it on them probably during every single moment of their day, even in the shower, during sex, during eating, everything. You might actually, you know, get into sort of that Apple Watch technology where you're studying their heartbeat, their blood pressure, all that kind of stuff, to big machine learn how a human being behaves. We want to capture this by design. That's probably a bad choice of words, but that's what I'm going to say in this particular episode. Now, neurologically speaking, for those of you who are familiar with the chemical structure of the human body, you very well know that the slightest imperfection in the human body can create dispositions in certain areas. We know that killers at times have had tumors inside their brains, which cause their brain to malfunction. We know that certain people have congenital issues where certain chemicals are in ample supply, too much so. Sometimes it erodes over time. Kids who are early diabetic patients have certain, you know, frailties within their system. So at the same time that this person is wearing this equipment, they would have to be inspected medically to the maximum degree as often as possible without harming them. Of course, these people don't really care about that. But the other thing would be the human observation being fed back into the big machine learning. For any of you who have children, you know that if you have more than one child, the likelihood that two children are the same is negligible. Nothing. Maybe monogamic twins, the super duper identical twins, have very similar characteristics. I dated a girl once who was a monogamic twin. One of the first events I went with them was to their father's birthday party. And the two twins had not communicated with each other, but they went to the store and bought the same exact card for their father. Can you imagine? Two different cities. They probably physically saw each other maybe once every 2 months at a maximum. And when it happened, my girlfriend at the time turned around to me and said, "Oh my God, can you believe that?" She goes, "You know what? This has happened dozens and dozens of times in our lifetime." And the whole family backed it up. It was a family of seven. Wow. So I think, quite frankly, that where we are with above ground technology in regards to robots is way behind our ability to actually do it. I think we have technology and capabilities way beyond what is being shown to the American people or the human, I should say the entire world, to be honest. But it does take a tremendous amount of financing. So I think that your individuals that could do this would be definitely any government with a fairly ample yearly income, but also eccentric people who have a tremendous amount of money and a desire to do it. Now, would this technology be spent on a newscaster who reports the weather? No. Would it be spent on a sports personality doing some narration for a sports game? No. I mean, would they immediately try to replace Putin? Probably not, right? That's way too high profile person. They probably just, you know, put a guy in some job somewhere, you know, it's just like Westworld, where they actually reenacted, especially in season two, the creation of these hosts, and they showed Dolores, who was one of the original robots that they ever created, and show how she had to learn everything. And everyone was fairly monotone at the beginning. And then through software upgrades, they ended up gaining an indistinguishable personality from a human being. But imagine you had a coarse version of what I'm saying. Now, it's pretty likely, okay, that Boston Dynamics robots are aimed at a couple basic functions. They're going to get along just fine with the human race understanding that these are metal robots. One would be the THX-1138 police officers with the cattle prods for the Agenda 21 endgame of 2030, where they reduce world population, and it's maintained by very overt humanoid robots that you can't possibly injure in any way, shape, or form. Remember, their big thing about Boston Dynamics robots is that even when they started creating the mule, which is the cow-shaped vehicle, they kicked it and kicked it. They kicked it on ice, man, and the thing corrected its feet. I mean, that, what you have to understand about that capability is that they've written a program that incorporates probably a tremendous amount of big machine learning, but also fuzzy logic algorithms that can calculate probability. And the processor power on those onboard computers, I've never done the deep dive to find out what those things are running on. If you can even find out, you probably can't. It's a super megahertz processor, because as the thing starts to fall, okay, and it's feeling its equilibrium, it's got all kinds of those gyros in it that you have in your telephone that knows what orientation is, so you can put it up to the stars and see where it is. It's thinking so quickly that it's able to create a whole new set of calculations and destinations for all of its limbs. And as the calculation either succeeds or fails, it's correcting again to achieve the most probable outcome to keep it upright. And the fact that when they first did it, they could knock it over eventually, and then eventually they couldn't knock it over anymore. Scary, amazing, scary, amazing. And then the humanoids, same thing, push, kick, hit it with the huge bar, knock it over. Of course, there's the CG guys that create the funny videos where the robots getting back at the guys and beating them up. The other use for the Boston Dynamic robots has been communicated to us, which is they're going to be used as replacements for various personnel on the battlefield. So the mules have been sold to the American public as the vehicles that will carry supplies for infantry people. So radios, ammo, gun replacements, all kinds of stuff. But again, in the theater of war and in the theater of civil discipline, the programs, although very complex and very amazing, don't have to be anywhere near the stuff that we've talked about in this episode to get extermination to happen. Again, there's the Black Mirror episode where the little black dog robot runs around and with just very little technology on board can exterminate the human race very easily. Black Mirror for me is the most predictive programming show that's ever been put on TV. And I don't think it's a mistake. It's not every episode or anything, but it's definitely some of the episodes, especially the little robot one. If you haven't seen that, go see it. Now, in terms of these things being available today, like a true replicant, it would all depend on how early these programs, meaning projects, were greenlit, whether or not they've lost funding at any point in time, and it would depend on any of the hurdles they might have run into. But regardless, they would want to warm up the public, wouldn't they, before you see? I mean, how alarming would it be? You go to the electronics show in Vegas, and they pull out a human being that you can't even tell. Imagine the host comes out on stage and starts introducing one of these clunky robots, and just like Westworld, I think it's like episode 2 or 3, you find out the host is actually the project, and you've been duped the whole time. That would terrify humanity. Absolutely terrify humanity. You would have legislative policies passed immediately to say where these things could be used, where they could be used, whether or not they have Asimov's, you know, prime directives to not hurt man, not hurt itself, not do anything that would compromise the first two rules, that sort of thing. So can you imagine that all this sort of clunky stuff that we see out there is simply warming us up intellectually for the eventual product that'll be ready the day that they think that we're ready to see the big product, the full-blown android human being that starts taking on amazing characteristics. Now, let's talk about social media being fed into this project. I don't know if you know this, but Uber, for instance, what they are doing is trying to harvest all of our travel data to then replace the drivers with driverless cars, like the Johnny Cab and Total Recall. That's been communicated to Wall Street as a reason to invest in them. They're doing what Westworld did to marketing in a fictional sense. They're doing that to automated cars, I should say. So now imagine taking all those intangible emotions that we said we had to put an apparatus on a human being and have them live their life while we're tracking the entire experience, putting it back inside the big machine learning. Because once you have a data set of all five senses, especially the biological function of the human body, whether the heart rate was high or low or whatever, so you know cause and effect models now algorithmically. As long as you can conceive of the metric that needs to be tracked, your big machine learning is off to the races, man. And with the power of quantum computing, oh my God, it's potentially instantaneous relative to man's time on Earth. But now think about this. We're on social media. We're posting our lives on social media. Our frequency of visiting social media is based on what's going on social media. It could be that the just the data that they're collecting right now can sense boredom, can sense the ADD adrenaline, dopamine drops in the brain. When we design video games, I teach a neurological class for students that I designed myself, which teaches game design based on the chemical structures of the brain so that you understand I can't make you have a success constantly, right? You know, it was a headshot. That bore you to death. It would waste out your chemical supply in your brain and you would eventually just start canceling out headshot because it wouldn't be special. But if I design the game to have a fairly good course, it's complex, meaning an arena where you're fighting, and I keep the count of people down to a certain algorithmic balance with that space that's allowed, I know, on average, the probability of you bumping into an enemy. I can even just listen to the game and find out, oh, we had too many collisions in the game. There's too many headshots going on in the game, so we need to bring the number down from 20 people in the arena to 15 and see how that goes. And once the little pops start to go in cadence with the brain's ability to manifest the chemical up, to drop it into your system, to give you that high, I got you. And I can make you really addicted to that game. And that's why all the coin-op games from the 70s were so utterly, brilliantly designed. You have no idea, if you haven't studied games on that level, why we don't have arcades anymore just blows me away. They're social. The games were amazing. Made a lot more money. They were cool. Plus, all the other facilities we could put in these arcades today would be just tremendous. You could put sports in there. You could do e-games, no matter what. It'd be really amazing. Plus, you could download various games to various units. If, as long as the controls matched a particular game, you could do it. You could do, you know, if you had four controllers, you could do Gauntlet or a bunch of four-player games, right? But I believe that through social media metrics analysis, a lot of that intangible human behavior could be captured between Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We got you. And that's a little scary, don't you think? It's even one of these things where you post a photograph of your family at some outing. You're doing a boating trip or whatever. Imagine the photograph being able to what? One, steal the GPS data out of the photograph, which gives them place and time of day, whether it was sunny or not sunny. It could read all the faces and find out who everyone is, and then use your, hey, everyone's my cousin, my sister, my aunt, my friend, because you really want to load up your social media with the full metrics of everyone who's genetically related to you. And it could literally calculate, oh, there's a bunch of smiles on everyone's face. Oh, but that one guy in the back is not smiling. Oh, we scraped his face and found out that he's actually not with their party, but we grabbed all his photographs too, and he actually murdered his wife later that day. You know, I mean, just the level of metrics that they can get out of social media today is way beyond your comprehension, unless you have a very autistic mind. So I don't think this is out of our reach. Again, covert programs. Was it the BioShock game? If you've ever played that game, you'll see it's just so that folks that didn't play the game understand what I'm talking about. you play this game and you find out somewhere, I think in the 30s is the storyline, some billionaire dude had a city built under the ocean, a whole city, because he was tired of humanity, tired of all the mouth breathers. And so he built this gigantic city somewhere on the bottom of the ocean and invited only the most brilliant people, artistic people, scientific people into his city. And they all covertly lived on the bottom of the ocean. But something went wrong. And you're the character to go down and figure out what went wrong. And they eventually, I think in the third version, it was a city in the clouds. That's the kind of thinking that would fund and create such a project, right? The Island of Dr. Moreau kind of stuff. You know, these crazy experiments, genetically splicing everything on planet Earth together to see what happens. Guarantee you that was real. They put those movies out to make it fictional in your brain. So if someone came up to you and said, you know, there's a real island that did that. And there is one island, I forgot. It's off the coast of New York, I think. But if, as long as they put out a piece of fiction, then your brain goes, when you're in the conversation, was, oh, dude, that's a movie. That's stupid. No one ever did that. That'd be horrific, right? And because you have a moral base, you can't conceive of what they do, right? Deliverance was to scare you out of the Appalachian Mountains because the MENA, Arkansas drug trade was landing in those mountains. They wanted everyone freaked out to explore that area of the world because that's where the drugs were coming in. That's why that movie was made. So seditious, man. Insidious. Anyway, I hope you dug the episode. I would be very interested in your opinions about all these things, especially if you have any expertise in any one of these fields, perhaps a field I didn't even mention. But I think this episode has a value to you, and that as you harvest scientific articles, keep your eyes peeled for those little articles that end up. It used to be an Omni magazine. They had the red pages and the silver pages. It was called the Continuum or something. I think the silver ones were called the Continuum. I can't remember what the red ones were called, but they would have these articles. And I'll give you an example. In 85, I read it in one of the articles that they had conquered jets landing themselves, actually AI landing and both remote control landing. And then when that event happened in 2001, it was, oh my gosh, they can really land planes remotely. And it was like, yeah, it's been an article 15 years ago. So those things are leaked out every once in a while and they just disappear. You'll hear people creating all kinds of inventions. I think there was a Japanese guy that created this crazy kind of fiberglass lattice that was supposed to replace all the highways in Japan because it was indestructible. And you wouldn't let them film the entire process, but you saw, it's kind of like Westworld, where there were little machine arms were creating this lattice of this mesh that was then coated and encased. And it was super duper resistant, like tree wood, you know? Many of you have probably seen the invention where they create solid tires for big trucks. Instead of being inflated and blowing up and splattering all over your car, these truck tires are solid. Yes, they weigh a ton, but when they run over nails and other things, no big deal. Just crushes them. Nothing to pop because there's no air in it. That's a genius idea. Some of you follow the concept cars that are coming out of the manufacturers like Mercedes and Audi and BMW. They have the exoskeleton, the car, you know, changes and has like scales and all of a sudden it's breathing. I mean, it's just nuts. Crazy stuff. We have liquid steels now, self-repairing steels. So just imagine all this happening. And I'll kick it off. I'll end it off on this one note, which is if you could conquer a fairly humanoid character that has fragility, right? It has some weaknesses in it. And then, you know, the story of like Wolverine, you could create one that is absolutely invincible. Invincible. Imagine someone standing in a crowd that cannot be killed, that cannot be injured. Maybe massive amount of electricity could kill it. Maybe a massive explosion could kill it. But unless someone's carrying a bunker buster under their arm, that thing's going to wipe out everybody if it wants to. Scary. So it might behoove us to put some brain power into possibilities in this realm. And it might behoove you to think about how much of your own personal life you're posting online to people like Mark Zuckerberg, who sell you out to Cambridge Analytics. Do you realize that every single private chat you've ever had with somebody on social media and Facebook has been sold overseas to a foreign country behind your back when he told you that your privacy was guaranteed? Unbelievable. And then he told the Senate that even after the app is uninstalled from your phone, they can still listen to your microphone. What? You can go to jail immediately. Shows you who's working with who, right? When you tell a cop that you're a huge drug dealer and your car is full of a bunch of cocaine or heroin or something, be the epic bust of the century. And the guy says, well, you just get on home, Billy. You know what camp he plays in. He plays in that camp. It's real simple, man. So anyway, if you haven't been to deepthoughtsradio.com, please go. It's where all the links are. I'll give you a short bumper today. It's got all the video, audio, social media. It's got all remastered season one. It has ways to donate, both Patreon and PayPal. To everyone who donates, thank you so much. You made the intro possible. You made this whole year possible. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself and someone else, and I'll see you in the next Deep Thoughts. Over now.